bid me to live, and I will live thy Protestant to be. Or bid me love, and I will give a loving heart to thee. A heart as soft, a heart as kind, a heart as sound and free, as in the whole world thou canst find, that heart I'll give. Bid that heart stay, and it will stay to honor thy decree. Or bid it languish quite away, and shall do so for thee. Bid me to weep, and I will weep while I have eyes to see, and having none, yet I will keep a heart to weep for thee.
Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am so pleased to welcome Kate Chisholm to the show. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Donald.
I'm glad you're here because Kate is here to talk about Out of Myself, Songs of Peter Foley, which is now out on digital and streaming from Center Stage Records. It's a fantastic live album. It was recorded back in 2023 at Symphony Space in New York. It was a concert of the songs of Peter Foley, and Kate was married to Peter Foley for many, many years. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, before we delve into the concert and then the resulting album, a little bit about Peter himself and your life with Peter and his creative process and how he wrote, because a lot of people may not be familiar with his work. And I think that this album is a wonderful entryway into the works of Peter Foley, because it's, as we will get into it, it's a, Dan, the publicist, recently just sent me the booklet for the album. It's a gorgeous booklet, and it's so, I'm sure you've seen it, but it's so beautifully put together, and the songs are organized in a really special way to give you an idea of the breadth of work that Peter had done. So talk a little bit about, first, Peter as a husband and father. You know, I know he grew up in Berkeley, California. How he got into music, how he got into writing music.
Sure. So yes, Peter grew up in Berkeley, born, I think, in the Summer of Love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was such a vibrant time being a kid in the, well, anywhere in the 70s, but I think especially a place like Berkeley, California. And he, you know, he started studying piano at a very young age, mainly classical, but then he started playing jazz in the Berkeley Public Schools. There's an incredible jazz program there that has mm-hmm. produced people like Joshua Redman and Peter Applebaum and Stephen Bernstein, and just really incredible people over the years. So Peter, you know, in kind of middle school, junior high, that's what he was doing. And then he, then someone introduced him to Sweeney Todd.
Uh-huh.
So this was probably right around, I guess, around 1979, 1980. And Peter was just blown away by it, and got completely obsessed with it. He said he listened to it probably every day for about a year. You know, got the vocal selections and the full score, and then he was playing it all the time. And that was really, I mean, that, I think, in a few productions that he saw of shows, that really got him into theater mm-hmm. and theater music. And You know, it's interesting because now, and I think you can hear this in the album, there's such a wide range of influences, musical influences, including, you know, pop music. And, you know, Peter said he grew up in a household that didn't even have a Beatles album. You know, there were cast albums and classical music and, you know, maybe some Joan Baez records. But, you know, so his few touchstones in his youth were kind of Stevie Wonder and Tower of Power, you know, the funk, funk disco. And then he got into reggae. And then, you know, as an older teenager moving to college, he was really into Peter Gabriel and U2 and Kate Bush. And you can hear a lot of that in the early songs on this album. That influence. But he was always also, you know, very serious music student. So he majored in music in college, you know, where they had to study. It was a pretty academic department. So a lot, you know, studying Beethoven, studying Bach, studying counterpoint. And he wrote a musical for his senior thesis project, which was pretty unorthodox at the time, you know, when people were writing their little atonal string quartets. But he just was always, he loved melody. He loved beautiful music. And so, but I think that influence of Sweeney Todd, where you can have this incredibly beautiful soaring music and this really dense, gnarly, dark sounds, you know, that those can coexist. And when you put those together, you get incredible drama.
How did you meet? Because people should know a little bit about you because you're also very actively involved in theater as a director and a writer and a designer. So how did you guys cross paths?
Peter was one of the very first people I met at college. So we both went to Yale. And we were, you know, we were both actors at that time and kind of auditioning for things at the same time. And then we were both in different a cappella singing groups. So our worlds overlapped, but we were really just friends. And then when we were seniors, we did this musical that he had written as his big project, full length musical. I think we had 30 people in the cast and, you know, took over a college dining hall. And I almost did not audition for that show, and a friend convinced me to, and I got cast in one of the leads, and the other female lead was Melissa Errico.
Oh, really?
And,
oh, that's
yes, and
that's
and
crazy.
In the pit of that show, so Rob Berman, who conducts the concert that is this album, played piano in the pit, and Manuel Feliciano played violin in that pit. So,
oh, wow.
It's kind of a small world. But we, you know, I just loved working on that show. I was just bowled over by Peter's music. And I think it, there's just something about it, his harmonic language that has always kind of just spoken to my soul. And, so we spent a lot of time together during that and, you know, our romance started. And then we were together for 32 years, married for 27. So it was kind of a wonderful way to leave, to graduate college, because we, you know, we already were a pair and we were kind of setting out to do all this creative work together. I mean, individually, but also together. It was
right.
A beautiful, exciting time.
Dream while you may, tomorrow. girl sleeps safe at night. Mommy's there to hold you tight, to tuck you in and dim the light. Before you sleep, you wish upon a star shining bright. But the dawn comes by and by. All the stars have left the sky. It ends the way it's always bound to. Mommy's arms are not around you. All alone, you're all alone. Yes, that's what happens to the dreams of little girls. Dreams of little girls. To the dreams of little girls.
Talk about some of his works, because I'm going to quote you, because I love some of the stuff that I've read that you have said about him. And that is, you said, and I quote, "Music and theater making was woven into the fabric of our life together for three decades. Peter lived it and breathed it. He was ambitious in his vision and rigorous in his craft. He didn't shy away from unconventional ideas or pushing the form." So expound on that a little bit, because you can definitely hear that in his music.
I love that. We graduated college, we moved to Brooklyn, and we were in walking distance of the Brooklyn Academy of Music, which had a festival called the Next Wave Festival. And there was just always very interesting international theater and music and dance happening there. And you could get a really cheap subscription. And we would just go, we just went and saw everything. And Peter always said that was his grad school. Mm-hmm. And I think it gave us a taste. And then Peter was also, you know, a huge Sondheim fan. And those were works that pushed the form and expanded what everyone thought musical theater could be. So he wasn't interested in writing the tidy little thing with four people that that you could write in 6 months. He was interested in these big kind of big works of art, and that's what he got the bug for. He wanted to do.
It sounds like it seems to me, and you can hear it in the music, I think, on the album, is that everything was complex and big and had lots of layers to it. And you can see that he also writes from his heart, and he also wants to take the audience on a journey and also kind of capture the audience's heart and touch their heart. Because you can, and that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you, was how did he decide on the subject matter and what he wanted, what shows he wanted to write? Because in order to overlay his type of music, you've got to find the right property. You've got to find the right material to overlay that on top of, right?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, that that's a hard undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a particular standards like Peter had. I mean, you know, he was always kind of reading book reviews and, watching old movies and just looking for, he's browsing bookstores, looking for ideas. But he did feel he kind of wasn't happening so much in the early 90s, but he really resisted that that kind of trend of turning every, you know, great movie mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. or even not so great movie, popular movie into a musical, because he just felt like, you know, if you are layering in music throughout something, it has to really add to the story. And that there are plenty of movies that are just, they're just great on their own.
Right.
And so I think it was a combination of a story that probably he felt like he had a way into personally. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that several of them, they're, you know, are kind of coming of age or stories of self-discovery, awakening, you know, and some of which have a spiritual component. And that was very much him. I mean, that's what he was interested in. And he was very self-aware and really tuned into his emotions and how, you know, the full range of them, and that's your, you know, artistic fodder in a good way, you know, mm-hmm. not sort of that, the stereotype of the, you know, angsty artist.
Tried and tried to remember what I felt, but all I can recall is the happiness in my heart, in my mind, dark and sweet and warm and blind. All I can recall is the happiness. No remorse, no regret, not a pang of shame, and yet you'll never love me in return, never worship, never yearn, he'll never kiss me, not again, not the way he kissed me. I love him, I love him, I love him. I know he belongs to Rose, but I love him, I love him. And the happiness grows and grows and grows.
But you said something before about, yeah, the thoughtfulness. And so we had a little virtual release party last week, the night before the album came out. And Rob Berman was talking about, you know, himself learning the music as we were preparing for the concert and really getting steeped in it and just seeing how meticulous and well thought out every choice was of Peter's. And that, you know, I think Rob said composing is really, you know, thousands and thousands of small choices.
Mm-hmm.
And yet all of that adds up to a sound that it sounds kind of effortless. And that's the, you know, it's a wonderful balancing act, I think he said. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, well, that's the magic of it, is that it's successful because it does sound so effortless. And it takes a really talented artist to make it sound effortless. When it sounds labored and it sounds clunky, it's because you're dealing with someone who's not as good a writer. And they don't have the finesse to pull it off. And with this album, you can see that everything just flows, and everything, all the notes are like exactly right, and everything just hits the right. And it's also not predictable, which I love, because he hits every, as you're listening to it, it bounces around from genre to genre, from he touches a lot of different things, because he's got such a huge array of inspiration and influences that he draws from, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the songs can shift from all, I mean, and the nice thing is the booklet kind of shows you exactly where you're going and why there are these shifts from the styles of music you're hearing, because they are written for such different pieces of work. And it's so nice to see that, because it shows you from a composer, lyricist, or just a composer in many cases, his interest is in so many different directions. But at the same time, he's the kind of writer who you can still tell it's all written by the same person.
Yes. Well, that's another thing that Rob said, and I've always felt this too, that, yeah, you can, you know, you can hear these, you can hear these influences, like in the very last section of the album is songs from a show called The Names We Gave Him, which is set in France between the wars.
Mm-hmm.
And in that score, you know, you hear Ravel, you hear Stravinsky, you hear Debussy, even Kurt Weill. And yet it sounds original. It sounds like Peter. And he did that with every show so brilliantly, so that rarely, I mean, there are a few sort of pastiche songs on the album, but really good, you know, really, really fine pastiche. So whether it's, right. whether it's, you know, 1930s jazz or a kind of Prince-esque slow jam, it's Peter just, you know, he finds the tasty spot in there and just nails it. So
right. Exactly.
I won't remember the song they're playing. I won't remember the simple tune. It may be brilliant or rotten, I'll have forgotten soon. Don't snicker, please. It's not from liquor or dotage. I won't remember the dry martini. I won't remember the chandelier. I won't remember who made my suit or my boutonniere. And if the linens were fuchsia, that's mere minutia, dear. Details elude me now that I've found you. You have unglued me. What to do? How to remember the scent you're wearing? How do I capture your eyes of blue? I'd like to put this day away in a jar and open it up whenever we are apart. I want a way to capture the day you captured my heart. Thought myself quite the clever one. Now I am not myself, I'm undone. How to remember your gimlet glances? and all the sparkling repartee. I'd like to put this day away in a jar and open it up whenever we are apart. Because I want to remember it all, the long and the short and the tall. I want a way to recall the day you captured my heart.
I want to talk about The Hidden Sky, which might, I mean, I guess may be considered his most well-known work because it was like, it was the one musical that was fully produced at Prince Music Theater in Philadelphia and received amazing accolades for him, several awards that he received for the work on that. Talk a little bit about the show, what it was about, how that whole production went for him, because that was a kind of a big deal. That was like his one big fully produced musical.
Yeah. Well, let's see. So he, you know, sort of, I remember when he, I mean, he was an Ursula Le Guin fan. So The Hidden Sky is based on a short story by Ursula Le Guin, who's a acclaimed, wonderful, wonderful science fiction writer, who, you know, she is in the category of science fiction, but I would call them, it's very mythological and very, she actually called them psychomyths, sort of these, she creates these other worlds that always make us reflect on our own society.
Mm-hmm.
And the work is timeless. And so this story, it was actually her first published short story. It's called The Masters. It's about, I don't know, 10, 20 pages long, which we then created into a full-length musical. No ambition there. But there's, you know, Peter landed on it. And I think what he was attracted to was there's this beautiful kind of spare writing that that Le Guin uses. And you know, it's set in a post-apocalyptic society where math and science have been outlawed by the ruling priests, because of it's only alluded to, but some past global devastation, apocalypse. So, you know, being children of the 80s, we always thought it would be nuclear war, nuclear winter. But now, of course, it could be climate change.
Right.
so again, kind of timeless. You know, in it, it's really this sort of struggle between science and religion. And there's this little group of underground scientists who are, you know, trying to piece together remnants of knowledge that, you know, were widely known before the apocalypse, but they don't even use zero. You know, they're using Roman numerals. so anyway, so the main character, Gneil, is a sort of natural born mathematician. And she kind of falls in with the underground scientists, and it's risky. I mean, that's a heresy in this culture, and people get caught. She risks her life. But she, in our version, she ultimately kind of transcends the dialectic. So she has a lyric towards the end of the show that's neither one nor the other, something of each. I'm one of the seekers reaching just out of reach, or something like that. But this idea that there's, through the heart, there's a third way. You don't have to be stuck in this dialectic.
I was taught the mechanical arts. I was tested and I passed. I must be a master then. At last it starts. I am wheeling the engine. After years with no one,
keep from falling fast asleep, waiting for the closing chime. I am a wheel in the engine, part of what keeps the motor moving. Wheel in the engine, and now the time has come at last to end this constant yearning, to be in behind the door, where the masters study ancient lore and learning. So I say, somebody show me the secrets, somebody tell me all there is to know, draw me deeper, show me the way, and then watch me go. Now my life will be all I dreamed it could be. Look, I have brothers, sisters, family, and Lonnie's dancing with me. Now I stand among them. Now we move as one.
But it's a wonderfully dramatic story. There's a chorus that acts as storytellers through the whole show. And you hear a little bit on this album, but in the context of the whole show, they have all this wonderful, you know, very kind of crunchy, exposed choral ensemble singing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a unique sound to that show.
And he picked up, I mean, if I remember correctly, he picked up several awards for the work on the show, right?
He did.
Was that the one he got? Did he get?
Yes. We both won the Richard Rodgers Award.
Right.
So he started writing the show by himself. Mm-hmm. And we would sit down at dinner and talk about it every night. I mean, when I said in those liner notes that he lived it and breathed it, he just was one of those artists who, you know, it's always churning in the back of his head. So he could be doing something else, but you could tell that he was still working something out, you know, even subconsciously. But anyway, we would just be talking about this all the time. And finally he said, I think you need to write this with me. Because we had very, very aligned aesthetics and views, mm-hmm, on what we would want to do with that story. So I joined the project. He won an NEA grant, New American Writers grant. And, you know, what's crazy is that was the very last year of individual artist grants in opera and musical theater. And the next year when he went to send in his report, because you have to do that, there was no department.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So that was kind of the height of the culture wars. And I mean, here, mm-hmm, we are again. But
right.
Yeah. And then he won a Jonathan Larson Foundation Award. The American Music Theater Festival had an award at that time. I mean, it's a really incredible score. And something that, you know, maybe you hear it a little bit in these mini sets in this album, but certainly when you listen to an entire score of his for any of these shows, you know, Peter sort of being schooled in the Stephen Sondheim tradition, he really did write motivic scores.
Mm-hmm.
And he do all those, you know, chord inversions and retrograde and all those kinds of things that you do for different characters, but that unite a whole score.
Yeah.
And he was really good at that and really committed to it. And so it is a treat when you hear, you know, one of these shows in its entirety.
So let's move on to the actual concert. and how this concert came about, because I mean, people should realize, I'm sure they've figured out because the way we're talking about this, Peter did pass away in 2021 after a battle with cancer. And from that point on, I mean, where do you go from there? It's sort of like, how did the concert come about? I know you have this, you also have this, as you've mentioned, this long relationship with Rob Berman, who's a Grammy Award winning guy who's done so much musical direction, and he's very well known in New York for his work. So how did the concert come about?
Well, we got to rewind to 2021. So,
yeah.
You know, it was the end of, so Peter, you know, he was dealing with cancer quite valiantly for really over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of that, he had a very good quality of life, I will say, but things got, you know, things got really challenging in the sort of final year when there were just no more treatment options. And, you know, it's interesting, you asked before about, or you mentioned that really only one of his shows had a professional production. And, you know, that was a very difficult thing in his life for him, and for me. You know, it's just very disappointing. You would go through development and get these commissions and get think you're getting close, and then just a door shuts. And, mm-hmm. you know, you've spent 5 years writing a show that's not getting produced. And so that it's a hard path. And, you know, it's interesting. I do feel like towards the end of his life, he got really into orchestrating. He wrote this show, The Names We Gave Him, that had a few kind of development opportunities in a university. And he decided he wanted to do all the orchestrations. And he actually did enlisted Bruce Coughlin as a coach for a little while, just to kind of get some coaching. And then he felt like he really understood it, because he really was, you know, pianist. He had played percussion in the Bay Area Wind Symphony as a teenager. But, you know, you really need to understand how all the instruments work together. Mm-hmm. And of course, he had listened and studied things. But anyway, so he was very much working on that. And I think, you know, he just always returned to the work. So
right.
Even though there were these career frustrations, he was such a true artist that, I mean, sometimes he said, like, I don't know what else I would do. it was his calling and he loved
right.
it. And that's what he was doing.
Didn't I also, just to stop for a second, didn't I also read that initially he wrote music and lyrics, and then later on he started working with lyricists and just writing music because he felt that he was too slow at writing lyrics, but also because doing both was just too lonely. And that says a lot to me about him in his love of the human connection and the collaboration of working with people. Do you know what I mean? It's there's the loneliness of someone who writes everything, but then there's something about the human connection and the collaboration of the art that he obviously was attracted to.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think he also used to say, I just want to be in the theater, making the theater. Right.
Right.
And that's a very different part of the process than sitting in your studio,
right.
your piano,
right. by yourself,
or your computer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was someone who loved people, and he was so, he was gregarious and just enjoyed. He was someone who you could have a conversation with him about anything, mm-hmm. you know, whether from, you know, 17th century music to the San Francisco 49ers or mm-hmm. craft beer, you know, anything. And he did love that human connection. And that, you know, that's why he had so many devoted friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our community is just incredible. And people who, I have to say, I know the most amazing men. And I think these artists and thinkers and people who are just not afraid to you know, to bear their souls. And Peter was very much like that. And he also had a kind of light in him that I think really, you know, drew people to him, and which comes out in this, some of this music, which is really ecstatic.
Mm-hmm. So we're now in 2021.
Yeah. So that basically, I just brought that up because that's what he was really working on, you know, right at the end of his life. I mean, he was still working on his orchestrations 3 days before he died. He just,
right.
You know, just wanted well, to.
A sign of a true artist.
Yeah. Well, it sustained him. It really did
right.
At the end of his life. And so anyway, so he began home hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And when we shared that news with our community of friends, a few people, you know, were like, oh my God, we have to do a concert, you know, some kind of tribute thing. And I just said, no, I don't have the energy for that. You know, mm-hmm. Peter is not going to have the energy for that. And that, you know, it would have to be done really well to satisfy him and kind of uplift him. And mm-hmm. It's just a hard thing to throw together at the last minute. So we decided to do a virtual listening party of his music, which only existed at that time in demos and
right.
And some live recordings. And, you know, some of the demos were really good, some great singers on there. But so we created this Zoom event and we did, and we structured it sort of show by show. So mm-hmm. We'll hear four songs from this show, hear four songs from this show, with little intros from the writers. And it was beautiful. It was such a beautiful event. And at the end of it, I mean, Peter was so moved. Because it was kind of like his life, whole life flashing, mm-hmm. you know, before him. And kind of, we all were so moved by the sweep of this range of music, just was abundantly clear. And you know, Peter's reaction was, what did he say? He said, so after the concert, Peter was very moved by this experience and by the attentive audience. He thanked his collaborators and then he said something like, well, he was very happy about hearing this range of music because that's what he set out to do. And that, you know, you wouldn't think the composer of the names we gave him was the composer of Bloom, these mm-hmm. different shows we represented. And then he said that he hoped at least a few of the songs, you know, touched something, you moved something in you. And that opening hearts was his secret agenda, his entire musical life. He said, I know it sounds pretentious. I just want to change how you feel for a couple of minutes and put you back in touch with some feeling you haven't felt in a while.
Darkness, if you find me, cloak me in your shadows. Hide me from this madness. Spirit me secrets, lose me in your mystery, shield me from the day, comfort me, disguise me, shut away the shame, darkness, won't you come erase my name? There are colors in the corners where the light can't go, where whispered songs into pearls and make goddesses of lonely anger. weakness when you find me. Touch me on the shoulder. Guide my steps by starlight. Take me by.
I think that says so much about Peter that, you know, he had all this brilliance and these thousands of choices, you know, making that he made as a composer. But really what he wanted his music to do was to touch something in the listener and kind of open something in them. And I have to tell you, Donald, we over the years with The Hidden Sky, there have been a number of people who told us it changed their lives.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because it touched something deeply spiritual in them and that just opened something up for them. And, you know, I used to think, wow, if we only ever have this small fan base, you know, knowing that impact, that's not nothing, you know?
No, you can't ask for anything. You can't ask for more. You can't.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I bring up this listening party because that really did become kind of the outline, the impetus for the concert that we did in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Within a few months of Peter's death, some friends and I were talking about, you know, how can we get his music out into the world? It cannot just sit there in the basement languishing. It's too good and it deserves, you know, it deserves it. And we want people to, you know, get the same amount of joy and that we have. So we formed a nonprofit called the Peter Foley Music Project to do this work. And we, you know, our board decided, well, yeah, a concert would be a good way to start. And I knew right away who I wanted to music direct, and that was Rob Berman. Rob was in that pit in that first show in Whitechapel at college. And he also music directed a few readings and a workshop of Peter's last show, which we were just talking about, called The Names We Gave Him, which he wrote with Ellen McLaughlin. And, you know, they were just friends. It's not like we saw Rob all that frequently, but just good friends over the years and great respect for one another. And I wasn't really that in touch with Rob. Rob and I were in the same singing group in college, so I maybe even knew him a little better. But when I called him to ask him if he would possibly be interested or have time, he just immediately said yes. And it was such a joy working with him on this, on the concert. And then this I knew he would be able to handle this wide range of styles.
Right.
You know, some of the songs in there really groove and you got to get that right. It's not necessarily typical musical theater music.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have, you know, you have very sophisticated, musical language in the Names We Gave Him songs. And so anyway, Rob was just brilliant. And he was so good at helping create the order of the songs for the concert, and it's almost identical to the album. We did change a few things.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, and you pulled in different, talk about pulling in who the artists were going to be for the concert. Because mm-hmm. I know a couple of the songs, actually, there were some songs that were written for, there's a song that was written for Melissa Errico for her film noir album. And there was a song written for Songs from an Unmade Bed, which, so you had some songs and you obviously picked artists for that, for those reasons too.
You know, we wanted to mix it up a little bit. I mean, yes, there, you know, you, over the years you develop strong relationships with singers and, you know, people who will come in and do demos for you and do workshops. And that's, that's really lovely. And I would say, yes, so Melissa, Michael Winther, Manuel Feliciano is also a dear friend of many years. And and he, Mono, let's see, he's never been in a full production of Peter's work, but Mono really spearheaded some concert. We did The Hidden Sky in concert in New York in, I think, 2006 or seven, like at Ars Nova and Joe's Pub. And Mono really spearheaded that effort. He's like, we have to get this show done. We have to get people to come see it, hear it, learn about it. So he was an obvious candidate. And of course, he's a wonderful singer. Issa Davis is from Berkeley. I think she was a few years behind Peter in school, but Peter was always kind of a legend there. And Mono and Issa had become friends working on some shows. So, we pulled Issa in. Jason Gauthier, I did not know, but he had sung the song Yellow Field, which is the last song on this album, in a different concert presented by Prospect Musicals, who co-produced our concert with us.
Mm-hmm.
So he had sung that song and beautifully, and he said yes. Mariah Grande is an old friend, incredible singer. She's out of Chicago, but about half were people who had some experience with Peter's music, some a lot, and then the other half were new to it. Mostly people that Rob knew. He was the music director of Encores here in New York.
Right.
15 years, I think. So he knows everybody, and he pulled in amazing people. And then we put together this intercollegiate chorus of, young musical theater performers, students, who were just all discovering this music for the first time. It was really exciting. And, I was so inspired by how inspired they all were by this music.
And the intent was to do this concert at Symphony Space. There was no intent to do an album. It was really just, we're putting on this concert in New York to showcase Peter Foley's songs so people can hear his songs and familiarize themselves a little bit with the shows and his artistry. And then something happened.
Yeah. So I have a good friend, Curtis Moore, who's a wonderful composer, lyricist, and old friend, colleague of Peter's. And, Curtis has given me some good musical advice because the music side of this business is newer to me. I mean, I sort of know how theater works, but I've had to learn a lot about the music business. But Curtis said, make sure you record every channel. Mm-hmm. So we had every instrument mic'd. We had the lead vocalist mics. The chorus miking, I might have done a little differently. Definitely would have if we had known we were going to be producing a recording. But it was really just, this will be an archive. And we maybe rebalance things for the videos. We did very nice videos. Thinking, we'll put this, we'll put the music on YouTube and get it out there that way. And then when our mixing engineer, Pete Karam, started working on the mixes, just again, for these videos, and we heard them, I just couldn't believe how amazing they sound. And some of them do sound like studio recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And both Pete Karam and Rob Berman said, Kate, have you thought about turning this into an album? And I confessed that I hadn't, but it just, then the wheels started turning. It was like, oh my gosh, this album that Peter always dreamed of having, is right here. And so we just have to take the next steps to get it all in place. And that's what we did.
Right. And Center Stage Records is taking it under their wings and put it out. And you're right. It's because live concert recordings don't always sound wonderful. I mean, even when they are planning on releasing them as an album, and this one, the sound quality is, amazing. I mean, it really does. In some cases, it does sound like it's a studio. It sounds like a concert recording recorded in a studio. Do you know what I mean? It's, I mean, because you can hear the audience. There's an audience that applauds at the end of the numbers. Yeah. But when the singers are singing, it sounds like they're in a studio. I mean, it sounds like they're in a recording studio. The sound is so good.
Yeah.
So it's really impressive.
Yeah, I know. I've just been blown away by Pete Caron's work. And you know, and I really appreciate all the people that have given me good advice as we've gone along here, to just, you know, record every channel so you have it, and you know, you just might be able to do something with it. And in fact, that Peter show, The Names We Gave Him, which was done in a really, really beautiful student production at Montclair State University in New Jersey. And unfortunately, it was a few months after Peter's death, so he didn't get to see it on stage. You know, we did the same thing. We recorded every channel. And that, you know, that recording is, it's not nearly as fabulous sounding as this one is. But we remixed it. And you know what? Now we have a complete demo recording of that entire score ready for someone to listen to.
That's great.
So, you know, with the full orchestra and everything. So I do recommend everybody.
You never know when you're going to need it. You never know. So you did mention a little bit ago, the Peter Foley Music Project, which is what you put together to kind of get this thing moving. What are the kind of goals and objectives at this point for the nonprofit?
Yeah, well, we really just have a simple mission, which is to advance Peter's artistic legacy by promoting and supporting performance, recording, and publication of his works. I mean, you know, his work is not published either. Mm-hmm. And it makes it hard for people to discover the shows.
Right.
So the first thing we did was build a really beautiful website. It's peterfoleymusic.org.
Yes, I'll include a link. I will include a link.
Yeah.
Yes, on the website.
Thank you. That really just shows the scope of what Peter did with some song samples. And now I have to go in and kind of rethink how that's done, those samples, now that we have this wonderful album. But that was a big step. You know, and then we did the concert, we did this recording. Our next project on deck is to make sheet music available.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is all a non-profit initiative, but it really to get the music out there so people can discover it and for themselves and enjoy it and perform it, you know.
Right. Well, and the more you get it, I think the more you get it, as you said, it's not, since it's not published, the more you get it out there and visible and performed, you know, the more likely you are to get potentially getting some of the shows licensed so that you can get them out there and get them performed and into, you know, into the catalogs for shows that are available to do and get productions done.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's certainly my hope.
Yeah. To get things moving along.
Yeah.
So the album, like I said, is available on Center Stage Records. It is called Out of Myself, Songs of Peter Foley. And Kate Chisholm has been with us here on the Broadway Radio Show. Thank you, Kate. It's been so delightful to chat with you.
Oh, this you is, too.
This
I
is,
could talk all day.
I know. It's a fantastic album, a wonderful tribute to Peter's music, which I would guarantee you many, many listeners are not familiar with Peter's music, but they will be after they hear this album. And I highly recommend it. And hopefully there will be some productions or at least some more concerts of Peter's music that we'll be able to see. I would love to see another Out of Myself concert being staged. It would be great if there's another concert coming up with some of these songs. Because I could, he's the kind of songwriter that I could definitely see more musical theater performers tackling his stuff. He's just in the same category as a lot of the ones that the musical theater people like to latch onto, because he's that kind of writer. There's so much depth to what he writes.
Yeah, thank you so much. There's definitely some prime audition material in there.
Oh, I would definitely
because they're
definitely
great, wonderful acting songs.
They are.
You know, each song takes you on a little journey, and it's all, you know, it's just written into it, the right. shape of that journey.
Right. No, yeah. I totally agree. So, as I said, there will be a link here on the website so people can find the Peter Foley Music Project and you can see what's going on. And there will also be a link to Center Stage Records so that you can find the digital. And please, as I tell people, I know that you can go to any of your favorite streaming services and stream the album, but that puts like pennies into their pocket. The best thing you can possibly do is purchase the digital download. It doesn't cost that much. Purchase the digital download because it helps fund and it encourages Center Stage Records to release other albums like this. So please purchase a digital download and not just streaming an album. Anyway, again, Kate, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you today.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Donald.
It was me, yes, Henri, I was lying there with you. It was me and it was summer.
Yes, and everything was spinning, spinning like it is right now.
All you see, yes, Henri, even when you close your eyes, all you see is golden yellow.
Yes, and we were just beginning, starting there and then somehow. And all that is to come is here in this yellow field where we
where it's you and me
under nothing but the sky. And I tell myself, remember this. I promise I'll remember this. So I keep the memory of your kiss and the sweetness of your taste and the thrill of your caress and your hair across your face and the buttons of your dress and the sound of the songbirds flowing like a river above us and the smell of the warm earth growing with the summer below us and the shadow that I threw on the beauty that was you. I knew I would remember this. I promise I'd remember this for the rest of my life. It was the best of my life, and you were there with me. I was at the center of my life. In this yellow field where we kiss, it will always be, it will always be like this. It will always be, it will always be like this. And all that is to come is here in this yellow field where we kiss. It will always be. It will always be like it will always be like this. It will always. And all that is to come is here in this yellow field where we lie, where it's you. Nothing but the sky.